The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And it is a very good Monday morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this 19th of June, 2023. It's a Monday, did I say that? You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. How was your weekend? What do you want to talk about? We've loads coming up on this show. We're going to be struggling to get it all in, but we want your views, your opinions, your experiences. 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. I expect we will get some feedback on the weekend's events as it relates to the Donegal International Rally. I do know, because we've already had some contact from people, that this conversation is raising its head again as it relates to noise and interference versus the reward and the benefits. You know what I mean? I think we're always going to have that conversation. But already people looking to have it today. 086 60 25,000, as I said. But it seemed to be a really successful event in a sporting sense. And we'll be speaking, hopefully, to the winners of the Donegal International Rally, the overall winners, a little later on in the programme. That and, as you can imagine, so much more besides. Let's look at the front of the newspapers. The Diary People, Donegal News this morning. It was a very busy weekend for Angadishi O'Connor, with close to 70 arrests made up to yesterday evening as thousands of visitors flocked to the county for the 51st Donegal International Rally. A significant policing plan, including air support and additional Garda resources from the northwestern region and national units, were rolled out over the weekend. There were over 60 arrests on Friday and on Saturday. And the breakdown of those arrests are, I can tell you, as follows. Now, there was many thousands of people in, so proportionately, not a lot of problems, really proportionately is what I'm saying. But then some might say, well, if there were more guards, there'd be more arrests. Friday night, there were 10 public order arrests, 6 road traffic arrests, and 2 general crime arrests, 18 in total. On Saturday night, 20 public order arrests, 4 for road traffic offences, 11 for intoxicated driving. On Saturday night alone, 11 people done for drink driving, 1 general crime, 3 assaults on Saturday night, 3 drugs arrests, 42 in total. So over the course of Friday and Saturday night, 60 arrests there. The Derry News, following the publication of a new report by the Northern Ireland Public Services Ombudsman, it was revealed 99% of GP respondents in the Western Trust considered that trust waiting lists communication with their practice is not effective. It was also found that if a patient is referred to the Western Trust, it's likely that they'll receive an acknowledgement, and the first waiting list correspondence they are likely to receive is a booking appointment letter approximately 6 weeks prior to an expected appointment. On to the Nationals now, and you could be in for a bill shock. Around 130,000 households are set to be hit with electricity and gas bill shocks as they're coming to the end of discount deals. Consumers face huge increases in their bills because the high discounts they were receiving have now been withdrawn. The warning comes as leading energy expert Paul Dean of University College Cork said consumers could see small price cuts of between 10 and 20% in autumn. I would say that's quite significant, Paul, with all due respect, but I appreciate your expertise in that area. But, you know, give me 20% off my electricity bill this winter, and I would say that's reasonably significant. I'd love to see more, but you know what I mean. He said it takes between 7 and 11 months for lower wholesale energy costs to wash through the system. Wholesale energy costs have come down significantly. This will lead to cuts of between 10 and 20% for consumers later this year. However, energy costs have more than doubled in the last 2 years, with the average home paying around $200,000 a year for electricity. Energy suppliers stopped offering big discounts to attract switchers when wholesale gas and electricity prices started to shoot up. And I noticed that myself, because I came to the end of my first year with a company that I'd switched to, and went on switcher websites, did my own research, and unfortunately there was no savings to be made. In fact, the company that I was with was the cheapest, which was quite frustrating. The Irish Times: Taoiseach Micheál Martin has defended the government's plan to neutrality debates and said it would be a fundamental mistake to shy away from examining Ireland's defence policy. What do you think about this? We're going to get to the President's suggestions and conversation on this to begin with. My first question would be, we're not shying away from examining Ireland's defence policy. We're shying away from doing it by way of a citizens' council. Why aren't we doing it that way, where it's 100-odd people from across society that would be more reflective of people's views? Instead, they're doing it through a series of sort of town hall-type meetings where they decide who is the chairperson, they decide who are the guests, they, to some extent, decide who attends. I was looking through the guest list of speakers at some of these important, in inverted commas, conversations about our neutrality. A lot of military people in there. I don't see, obviously, now I'm open to correction, I don't see anyone who would be anti-war or pro-neutrality that has campaigned in that regard. So if these are debates, you know, let's get all views in there. But I would have thought we established the Citizens' Assembly to discuss such matters. Now, I know some people have some issues with that format itself, but at least it is, as we're told, a representation of the Irish people. We have not asked for a debate on our neutrality, so we're not shying away from it. A debate has been created in a certain way. You couldn't call it a debate, and people are expressing their concerns. So I think we have to be careful with how this is being framed to us. Well, claims by President Michael D. Higgins that Ireland is experiencing a dangerous drift in foreign policy have caused concern at the highest levels of government. Further comments by the President about Louise Richardson, the chair of the forthcoming consultative forum, have also caused controversy, with Fine Gael TD and former Minister for Foreign Affairs Charlie Flanagan accusing Mr Higgins of engaging in an unnecessary and gratuitous attack, which was uncalled for. The President referred to Professor Richardson as a person with a very large DBE, Dame of the British Empire, which is perhaps a little bit harsh, because my understanding is she received that for her work in medicine. But that being said, she has expressed views in the past on the likes of US foreign policy and other types of military or foreign policy, military action type of stuff. So if that's your chair, I don't know. The Irish academic, who was previously Vice Chancellor of the University of Oxford, is now President of the Carnegie Corporation of New York, a €4.7 billion philanthropic foundation. So as I say, you know, we have a format there that could work that through. If, as I say, we're not asking for this conversation. I think most people are sort of saying, you know, we know where we're at. We're kind of happy where we're at. I don't know. I don't want to either be guilty of trying to steer the conversation myself. But anyway, what do you think? 086 60 25,000. Do you welcome the President's inserting himself in this conversation? Many would say there was previous conversations he could have had a few words about. But anyway, he's decided this is the one for him, and the government don't seem too happy. We're going to be talking about that a little later on in the programme, by the way. He was speaking to the Business Post, and we're going to be speaking to a journalist from that paper later on to tease out his conversations more. But I'm mentioning it now because it's your views really that are important. We're going to be discussing this story as well, and it's not this one specifically, but around it, but I'm sure we'll come on to this, because you might remember that it's probably 3 or 4 months ago when medicine shortages first started to happen. Maybe it's longer. And we spoke to a number of chemists, local chemists, Tom Murray amongst them, who said that pharmacists need to be given the power to be able to effectively, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, if a prescription comes in, it's not available, but they, through their experience and knowledge, know of an alternative, to be able to give that alternative to the patient, and it speeds the whole thing up, frees up GPs, makes an awful lot of sense. And as I say, you first heard those calls on this programme months and months and months ago, but it's the front of the Irish Daily Mail today. Politicians urgently need to give pharmacists the power to swap patients' medicine to cope with the medicine shortage crisis. Pharmacist Sheena Mitchell said chemists are being forced to tell people there's nothing they can do, but we know that there is more that we could do as a country. The situation is so acute. Common drugs such as low-dose aspirin, which are used to prevent heart attacks and strokes, are currently out of stock. So as I say, you heard that story here on this show 4 months ago. It's the front of the papers today. The Irish Daily Mirror has an important analysis of the level of crime against women and girls. And we read that the number of women and girls killed in Ireland has almost doubled in a year. They've established that 13 females were victim of homicides in 2022. That's an increase of 6 from the year before, representing an increase of 85%. And with half of 2023 still to come, already 6 women have suffered violent deaths this year. If that grim trend continues, there are likely to be more than 10 women killed in 2023. An Irish Mirror analysis of all femicides, as they're called, although I, for some reason, that word doesn't have the impact I believe it should have. But analysis of all the femicides show there have been 38 since the start of 2019. In 2019, there were 6 victims. That was the same toll as 2020. But there's a serious issue of violence against women in this country, be it domestic abuse figures, which we are seeing, but serious assault, serious injury, and murder. And the reality is it is perpetrated almost exclusively by men. It's an interesting 2-page article there that's well worth a read. The mystery surrounding the death of Noah Donoghue deepened after it emerged crucial information was withheld from the dead boy's mother. This is the Irish Daily Star today, and this is just a horrific story. If, you know, all of this other stuff wasn't going on around it in terms of information, the investigation, I have to be careful with what I say because there's consequences for your words when you're on the radio, but anyway, the latest development reads as follow. A video has emerged of Noah, 14, riding his bike after he snuck out of his Belfast home at 3:30 a.m. on the day he disappeared before returning almost 35 minutes later after an unexplained and secret trip. It's now emerged he left his apartment on Fitzroy Avenue in South Belfast in pouring rain and was wearing a t-shirt, shorts and flip-flops and carrying headphones. But when he returned at 4:05, he was captured on CCTV soaking wet and without the headphones and his flip-flops. But the video, which was taken just 14 hours before his disappearance, was only revealed to lawyers working for his mother, Fiona Donoghue, over 2 years after her son's tragic disappearance of June 21st, 2020. Now, why would that be the case? I have no idea. It just is really not what you might expect. Donald McIntyre, who is heading up an independent investigation into the case with a team of crime experts, they're now seeking crowdfunding in order to complete their work, which will be broadcast in a film after the inquest. So that's really quite a strange development there. And finally, on a more upbeat note, of course, one of you out there, and I would love to speak to you, is well over €6 million better off. There were two lucky punters who are now multimillionaires after sharing the biggest lotto jackpot of 2023. The winning numbers were from Donegal and Westmeath and will now split the award, which was an astronomical $12,744,000 plus change. They'll take home a whopping $6.373 million each, making them the 15th and 16th National Lottery Millionaires of 2023. And just in case you haven't figured it out yet, it could be you. The winning numbers were 2, 3, 21, 43, 44, 46, and that bonus number is 7. And I think the winning ticket was sold up in the north of the county. Was it Inishowen? Can I say it was Inishowen? It's no secret, is it? The lotto won't tell us because they have a process to go through, and I get it. Not everyone does, but I get it that they sort of have to. They want to do the big hoo-ha, the big reveal on Tuesday, but it was a shop in Inishowen. If you won and you want to share your love, I won't ask for any money, I swear. If you want to share your joy, get in touch with us, 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or call 074 91 25,000. Now, we read that Gardaí are investigating an alleged sexual assault of a resident with an intellectual disability in a private nursing home in Donegal. The woman had been admitted to the private nursing home by the HSE following a stay in hospital when the alleged assault occurred in May. The alleged assault was reported to the nursing home's director of nursing the following day. Right, we're going to tease this out with a little bit more information and opinion from Deputy Thomas Pringle. This is just horrendous for the victim and for their family, Thomas.
Morning, Greg. Yeah, it's shocking, really, and particularly when you look at it in light of the Brandon report and the Brandon and how the HSE didn't deal with the Brandon case over the years. To see that something else like this could happen at this stage now, and what's supposedly this a lot more attention in Donegal, and the way to actually deal with these cases has supposedly been highlighted to staff and that. And you'd have to ask questions as to HSE management as to actually what is going on, because I mean, as it's shocking, and it must be horrific for people, family members of loved ones who are in care in Donegal, to be wondering what the situation is in relation to their own loved one at the moment. And that's not fair, and it's not, that's the way we should expect a lot better as to how people can be treated.
We might have naively thought that with everything that we've learned through the Brandon report and other cases, that, you know, everything would be done correctly, or everything would be done as it might be expected. But we've learned that it took 2 days after this assault before the woman's family was told about the alleged assault, and a report was filed with the HSE's safeguarding and protection team. Now, I don't know the exact circumstances, but I'd imagine that that compounds the situation, in that presumably her family would have wanted to have been there to support this person immediately. Just, that would just be my initial reaction to it. For time to pass like this is just beggar's belief to me.
It's horrific, and you know, and clearly they knew something was going on, and they knew something was wrong, so they didn't report it, and they didn't let the family know. So that person was left to suffer on their own for those 2 days, and that's just it's a beggar's belief, Greg, at this stage, that this would be allowed to happen. Look, and no matter what system you have, mistakes can be made and stuff like that there, but we don't know that this is what happened, and we see that they actually, it appears that there hasn't been an attempt even to respond properly to the situation, and that's the worrying thing about it. And thankfully, well, hopefully this incident will be investigated fully, and maybe then the HSE will learn some lessons out of it. Because in reality, through the whole Brandon stuff, the HSE's only modus operandi was to cover it up and to make sure that it stayed went quietly away. And we've seen how that has worked now when we see this incident happen in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the default answer, and maybe that's just the way it is, but investigations are ongoing into this matter. No information is available at this time. You know, it kind of is a little bit frustrating, because then what can be done right now to sort of say, right, this is happening now. How can we make sure it doesn't happen again? Because that statement, and I get it, because this is a crime that needs to be investigated, an alleged crime, but it kind of draws a line under it for now.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand, like you say, we understand the reasons that they're saying that they want to give information away in relation to it, but they could actually say that a crime has happened and that something has happened and that they're actually investigating it, because they're given very little information. And sadly, I think the hope is that maybe it'll be forgotten a bit. And, you know, in 6 months' time, when they've said nothing for 6 months, maybe people will forget to ask it or raise about it again. And then a family are left to deal with the circumstances and deal with the case on their own at that stage. And like, I mean, we have to be certain and make sure that the HSE know that the HSE works for us. They are working for the people of Ireland, supposedly. So they have an obligation to actually work on behalf of those people and protect people and make sure that the things are done properly. And look, if from time to time things aren't done right, and that they should be man enough as well to come out and say, look, we got it wrong, things are changing, and we'll make sure that things change. But what we get is a complete cover-up and an ongoing cover-up, and actually the cover-up becomes more important than the actual issue itself. And that's just not on, and this day and age, it's wrong, and we have to make sure that doesn't continue on.
Now, separately, this has turned out exactly as I expect it to. In fact, it might have been in a conversation with you, but I knew what was happening behind. I can't say it, right? But maybe, I don't know if you could use dual privilege or something to say it. I don't know if there's something there, but it was very clear in and around the time of the Brandon report. You would know, you know where people are still working and where they're not still working. And there was a period of time, there always seems to be a period of time where things happen. And then we get to the point where we are now. The Sunday Independent revealed at the weekend that no HSE staff will face disciplinary action for failing to stop an intellectually impaired resident from sexually abusing 18 vulnerable residents over the 13 years. And here is it. The HSE told the Sunday Independent that the individuals who held key management roles and who had responsibility for disability services during the relevant period either no longer work for the HSC or have since passed away. And as I say, none of that comes as a surprise to me. I don't know if it comes as any surprise to you.
Sadly, it doesn't, and it shows actually the shortfalls in the whole procedure in relation to Brandon and that too. Because, okay, if somebody no longer works for HSE and they've moved on, I mean, surely then there still can be some action taken. I mean, those people are still pension holders of the HSE. We're still paying their pensions. Something like that. And it's not a question of just gratuitously making somebody responsible. I mean, unless people are held responsible, we can be sure that the one thing that we can be sure of is that these cases will continue, and it has been shown in this particular case as well. And that's the sad part about it. And there has to be some an element of people been seen to be the process has been seen to be concluded, and somebody's been seen to be said, this is done wrong, you have done this wrong, and this is the outcome for
but
that.
But you can work for, I don't see how we can ever get accountability in any organisation where you can work for that organisation, you can be alleged to have of perhaps failed in some of your duties. And then there is a period of time which you can say, oops, this might not go very well for me. I'm going to go and start doing something else somewhere else. And then that's the end of it. So,
yeah.
How would that do anything other than breed an environment whereby there is no accountability? Because there is evidently none, because you can just, step away. I'm not saying that happened in this case. I don't know the ins and outs. I have to be careful with what I say, but let's just presume that was the case.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the problem, because then it leads to an overall case of that there is no accountability, and the fact is that people should be accountable, and they should be made sure that they actually, if they fail to do their job, then if they fail to protect people and people who are very vulnerable, that there has to be an outcome. And it's not for gratuitously making an outcome and making somebody pay for it. It's for making sure that people act properly and act in the future
as well. It's not for a head and a stick. It's for a trust of transparency, accountability, lessons learned. You know, I mean, no one's baying for blood here, but it's a very unsatisfactory conclusion to this situation.
Yeah, and that's the problem with it. And what that does is it says to people who are in the who are taking up that position afterwards that there's going to be no comeback and there's going to be no kickback in relation to. So basically, what we can do is we can do the job, keep our heads down, keep it on going, and if anything goes wrong, we can walk off into the sunset, and that'll be okay.
And do you know who I feel ultimately sorry for? I mean, not ultimately. I mean, it's the victims and their families, but the good staff of the HSC. Those who may have raised concerns, those who knew what was going on, those that tried to kick it up the chain, that are listening to this, probably listening to this broadcast now, and you know they're going, right, so that's how it works. Can you imagine how you'd feel working in that environment when, and some of them, I'm sure, perhaps maybe had potentially their careers didn't go exactly the way they wanted them to because they raised concerns.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. And I know some people are considering even their future within the HSE at the moment, saying that things are never going to change. And that's the reality of the situation. And so they're wondering why they should continue on and why you keep banging your head against the wall. And, and these are people that would be very worthwhile to the organisation and very beneficial to the Irish people to have in post and have in position. But they're getting completely frustrated and completely fed up with the situation and would feel more comfortable in walking away than trying to continue on. And that's wrong, and that's the system. We need to get beyond that, and we need to get beyond it. And we need to get beyond it for the families of people and for the residents themselves and for the wider community, so that everybody knows that their best interests are going to be looked after.
Okay, thanks for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. That's Independent Deputy Thomas Pringle there. 086 60 25,000 if you want to have your say. Right, before I take a break, quite a bit of contact coming in as it relates to the weekend. We'll go to this email from Peter from Letterkenny. And the headline, that was the weekend from hell. And I'll read on here. How did it come to pass that quiet, considerate, peace-loving Letterkenny became the centre of lawlessness, littering and such incredible noise? And why is it encouraged and tolerated? I'd love to see a survey taken on support for the Donegal rally in Letterkenny itself. I'd also love to see an explanation from the DCC Gardaí re their inability to keep law and order over the weekend. Honestly, it feels like the town's been visited by an abusive relative and it's too frail and meek to stand up for itself. The treatment of Letterkenny and its environs and people by the supporters and entourage of the rally this weekend was nothing less than a disgrace. I have nothing against the rally itself other than its reliance on fossil fuels and its carbon footprint and the huge increase in roadkill. Let them have their fun too, but I don't see how hosting the rally in a residential centre is in our interests, and at a spend of an average €280 per visitor, 20 million and 70k people, there seem better, far more sustainable ways of bringing far more desirable tourists to Donegal. How about that survey, Highland Radio? Well, listen, I mean, if the truth be told, surveys on radio stations or whatever, they're not scientific, because you just get a certain group of people that are really passionate about something one way or other, and they're more likely to message in. And I know I kind of feel like I say that before, but we could throw it open and it could be like 75-24, but it might not actually be really reflective of it. So let's tease it out by way of conversation. I'm not saying we won't do it, but we got another email in too from... another listener about antisocial behaviour. Greg, I'm a local resident of Salaghraine, Letterkenny, and what my wife and I witnessed over the weekend since Thursday evening, all day and night, is an absolute disgrace for members of the public who came to the county for the Donegal International Rally. We live in the vicinity of the Oireachtas Leisure Centre and had to endure hundreds of people acting with total disrespect to the residents of the area. The following were observed from our living room window. One, throwing of glass bottles purposely on our property, smashing the glass over the drive on numerous occasions. Two, males entering the garden and urinating. Three, knocking on our door at 5 a.m, frightening for my family. Four, stealing our garden property and throwing it over the hedge. Five, noise pollution, roaring and shouting obscenities, beeping excessively, revving of cars at all hours of the night, resulting in no sleep for my children. Six, cars dangerously driving at speed and erratically around sharp bends. Drivers driving with car doors open and passengers hanging dangerously out of the cars, pick up trucks with large groups in the open back. The campsite, located adjacent to O'Donnell Park, is not fit for purpose and needs to relocate. The road from Old Dunn's to O'Donnell Park is too dangerous, and with the speeding cars and hundreds of people walking on the road due to poor footpath or no footpath at all, not to mention the lack of streetlights, this is an unsafe location in my opinion. Garda presence was non-existent over the whole weekend, considering the large volume of people moving between these two locations. I didn't see one Garda patrol this route on foot, and I deem this unacceptable. We, the residents of the town, have been let down once again. I'm sure others felt exactly the same, in that we felt that we were prisoners in our own home and couldn't leave the house due to feeling unsafe. I welcome the attraction from around the world that the Donegal International Rally brings to our beautiful county, but in recent years, this antisocial behaviour seems to be getting out of control by this cohort of car enthusiasts. Charlie, though, on Facebook says, good morning all, Letterkenny back to normal, lots of cash circulating over the weekend, and it is good for business. Okay, let's see. I want to stay on track here just for a second. Now, those two are on something separate. Right, I'll come back to those after this break. Stay right where you are. Okay, just to officially state what the HSE told us in relation to our conversation with Thomas Pringle. They said, while we cannot comment on an ongoing Garda investigation, the HSE is aware of an alleged incident that took place in a private nursing home. And then that was what the HSE said. But we heard from the Gardaí then that Gardaí are investigating an alleged assault that is reported to have occurred on the 15th of May in Letterkenny. Investigations are ongoing into this matter. No further information is available at this time. Right, okay. So different views coming in as it relates to Michael D. Higgins. He has had his say. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has defended the government's planned neutrality debates and said it would be a fundamental mistake to shy away from examining Ireland's defence policy. Claims by President Michael D. Higgins that Ireland is experiencing a dangerous drift in foreign policy have caused concern at the highest levels of government. Owen Gallagher is president of Young Fine Gael. What do you think? Do you welcome the president's Do you welcome the president inserting himself into this debate, Owen? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, so look, I suppose there's two points here in terms of where I think that the president is wrong in his remarks. And the first, I suppose, is in that it diminishes the integrity of the office of the president. I mean, the president is there to safeguard the Constitution and not to trample on it. And I know there were some suggestions yesterday that he knows the boundaries. Well, I think he does know the boundaries, Greg, but unfortunately he has absolutely no respect for it. And I think the second point then is on the content of what he is saying, which I'm not sure people have really thought about. You know, this was not just a simple expression of support for neutrality, but it was something a lot more cynical. It was a lot more Eurosceptic. It was a lot more anti-Ukraine, and it was potentially even pro-Russian. You know, have a situation...
I mean, you're reading quite, you know, deeply into that, but let's take
But just to finish on that point, Greg, I mean, we now have a situation where, you know, there are two heads of state in Europe that have called into question support for Ukraine. Michael D. Higgins and the far-right authoritarian Hungarian president, Viktor Orban. I mean, is this the company we really want to be keeping?
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a stretch, but look, it's your view and that's fine. Owen, why not? Who's calling for this debate on our neutrality?
Well, I think to call it merely a debate on neutrality is a bit simplistic. I mean, it's a discussion on the future of our defence forums. And I mean, the president has said of this that, you know, the forum is made up of, and I quote, admirals, the generals, the air force, the rest of it. So, you know, like we have a situation now where you have the commander in chief of the defence forces is suggesting that senior military leadership should not be involved in discussing the future of defence forces. I mean, would he like poets to be discussing this instead of the experts?
You know, maybe we could have poets, we could have dentists, we could have journalists, we could have people who are unemployed. We have citizens' assemblies. Surely that is the forum for us to discuss something like this. Instead, we bypass that. Some might argue because the government might not like the outcome of that and it could be quite definitive. And instead, we move to a manufactured debate that I don't see any representation from people who are anti-war, for example, or are actively campaigning for neutrality. So we have this forum generated, bypassing one that's been established already, the Citizens' Assembly, and it is quite heavily loaded with people with a military background, and you know, military. You know what military means, don't you? It's like armies that fight.
Yeah, well, I mean that's a fair point, and you're entitled to hold it. But I mean, I suppose about the president's comments have called into question. I mean, whether he wants to have a discussion on it at all. You know, which I don't think is wise. I mean, the other point to note, I mean, with the commander-in-chief again, who said he doesn't want to invest in our defence forces, but he does want absolutist neutrality. I mean, I don't know how he defends to defend the country. Like, maybe he could explain that. I mean, is he happy that we continue to rely on the UK?
Yeah, but you don't seriously think that we'll ever allocate enough of our GDP to put up any reasonable defence from a foreign state here. I mean, we will never have the capability to defend ourselves. Look at Ukraine, a huge army, and they knew what was coming, and they had years to prepare, and they would have been wiped out in a day if it wasn't for Western intervention. So, I mean, I think that is a worthwhile conversation to have. Should we really be wasting money on tokenistic defence that would offer really no defence at all?
Well, I think these are exactly the type of conversations that we need to be having, but the president doesn't want us to be having the conversations at all. And, you know, I mean, if the president wanted to be making these remarks, perhaps he should have stayed in Dáil Éireann and not gone to the office of the president. I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it, Greg. I mean, this is the classic populist thing. I mean, his attitude on these types of things is he doesn't need to respect the institutions and can say whatever he wants because he won an election. And, you know, this to me sounds an awful lot like Boris Johnson's recent attitude to parliamentary scrutiny, where, you know, he thought he could trample on the institutions and norms just because he won a big election victory.
So you believe then the president should have no view on this whatsoever?
He's entitled to his view, but I think he needs to be respectful of the office of the president, and you know, he needs to be cognizant of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the government needs to be respectful of the views of the public?
Absolutely.
And so, I think do you believe
the opportunity for the public to weigh in on the discussion, and there's four public consultations.
Oh, look, there's any up here. We're in the northwest here. I wouldn't even know how to get a ticket. I don't know who the panel is. Well, I do know the panel is, because I had to research that. But, you know, I mean, this is not the public having their say. This is three or four meetings with a hand-picked panel to discuss really, really serious issues, but issues really that the government haven't been polled as to whether they want the conversation to be had at all. Do you get where I'm coming from, Owen? No, I think Owen has... I've lost Owen there, but I think he's made his point. He was quite firm in his criticism of Michael D. Higgins. And what do you think? Do you agree? That's Owen Gallagher, president of Young Fine Gael. Owen, I appreciate your time coming on there, but our link broke down. But as I say, I think most of the points that you wanted to make have been made there. Another, I totally agree with the president. I feel like our neutrality is being sold out to big business involved in war. We do not have the resources or a reason to get involved with NATO. Another, it's very important for the people of Ireland to keep close scrutiny on politicians that seem to promote NATO. The brown envelope extends further than local government, they say. Right, okay, and more here. Good morning, Greg. A great performance by Donegal on Saturday evening. None this handling the ball to each other around midfield like the last few years. Michael Murphy was wasted, should have been in full forward, and well done to the ladies too. Yeah, indeed. We'll be talking to that about. We'll be talking about that to Brendan Devaney. He's back with us after 11 o'clock previewing the DL Debate podcast. And get involved in that conversation too. Actually, it's really quite interesting. And I don't know if it's exciting or disappointing. I'm not really 100% sure that in the prelim quarterfinals, it's Donegal versus Tyrone. So it's a renewal of old rivalries, but perhaps rivalries that are all too familiar. I don't know. Right, a few more on the rally here. I was in Letterkenny on Saturday. It took me an hour and a half to drive from Clanree to Mischippy. I couldn't understand what was happening along the road. It was a disgrace. I didn't see one guard in the area. Young men drifting on the road, spectators in the middle of it, watching and cheering them on. I couldn't believe it. I'm not dissing the rally as I'm a spectator myself. However, surely more needs to be done for those who are causing chaos in the town. And again, I think it's really important that there's two things happened here. There was a really well-run, well-marshalled, well-competed event. That's the Donegal International Rally. And then there is individuals in the car scene that come up to Donegal, and I think it's the majority of them that are around Letterkenny that never see a stage, really. You know, they're not going to be up in High Glen or out in Fannad or down around Donegal Town. They're in Letterkenny for the weekend showing off their cars. It is a car meet. Really, I believe this is the way I would define it. There's a car meet that goes on, and it's one of the biggest in the country. There's a car meet that goes on in the same county as the Donegal International Rally, and that is the connection. And I would be confident, actually, by the way, if the Donegal International Rally ceased, and we hope it doesn't, but if it did cease, I believe that you would see this car rally effectively, this car meet. I think it's so well established now at this point that it would happen anyway, irregardless of whether the rally happened or not. Is that controversial? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. But I think there are two separate things happening at the same time here, and I think it's important that I believe it is, but I don't, if you want to come on and say otherwise, that we separate that out to some point. As I say, I think there's a huge car meet that takes place in Donegal Town at the same time on the same weekend as the Donegal International Rally. Listener says, rally noise pollution was the worst ever in Letterkenny. Would love to know the air quality pollution. There was no reason why the rally cars had to return to Letterkenny for service, which added to traffic chaos over the weekend. Greg, some will be happy in Letterkenny about the amount of money they made this weekend with high prices. But for the rest of us, Joe Soaps, this weekend was absolutely disgraceful. 90% of the people coming to the town are savages, and I don't say that lightly. Their behaviour had a lot to say. Had a lot to be desired. And as for the Garda, meant to have a traffic plan, for the only plan I seen was a 4x5 foot female Garda standing at Gallagher's. I'm mixing things up here. The only police plan I saw was a guard standing at Gallagher's hotel. If an incident did happen, what was the guard going to do? The rally should be stopped from next year. On us citizens in this town should not be subjected to this lawlessness free for all. As I say, stop the rally. I still think you're going to have one of the country's biggest car meets in Letterkenny. I think it's just established on the calendar now at this point. Now, Tata Consultancy Services finds business leaders are doubling down on cloud as a long-term catalyst for innovation, AI-powered transformation and sustainability. We're joined on the programme now by the Director of Strategic Initiatives for TCS in Ireland, Gerard Grant. Gerard, thanks very much for taking the time out this morning.
Morning, Greg. How you doing?
Right, okay. Talk to me about this survey. And I suppose maybe just for those who may not be aware, talk to me about the cloud and business and its importance. And I suppose that leads in then to the findings of this survey.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, what businesses are thinking about doing over the next while is investing in cloud. And cloud is, you know, the large cloud data centers that are based around well-known names like Google, Amazon and Microsoft, where your data is hosted in secure data centers across the world and is accessible 24/7. And those data centers then and those services come with a lot of innovative capability that businesses want to take advantage of over the next couple of years.
And it seems that Irish respondents are even more keen than the sort of global average.
Yeah, three quarters of the businesses we surveyed in Ireland, or nearly three quarters, really looked at cloud as a catalyst for innovation, whereby not only could they buy services from the cloud to road test or prototype or innovate, but also they could try services in a low-cost way. When you think about the big advantage of cloud compared to legacy IT, where you had to buy equipment and install it in your premises, really now you can access that technology and capability over an internet browser, you know, do some research and development, road test or prototype your ideas, and in a very low-cost way, if you need to, then take it back down until you're ready to progress it to the next stage. And that's where the real flexibility in cloud is a real advantage, especially the small businesses as well.
Yeah, and Ireland, again, in particular, with a close eye on the developments in artificial intelligence and how that can be utilised for their businesses.
Yeah, and when you look into that in a little bit more detail, companies are using that in a very creative way. As an example, a lot of companies are using artificial intelligence and machine learning to screen out what we call the noise in cybersecurity. So companies, large companies, get a lot of cybersecurity alerts every day for threats and updates and potential attacks. And where artificial intelligence plays a key role is it's able to screen out those thousands of interactions and then bring the really important ones to a human cyber threat associate. So to somebody in the cyber center that can say, yeah, this is a real threat and these are not. And that's where artificial intelligence with the power of cloud is able to really multiply that like no other system can, really.
Yeah, and this is not necessarily at this point, and there are sort of really quite worrying predictions for the future. This is not necessarily about replacing humans at this time, but it's making their work more efficient because they're actually probably only dealing with situations or threats that have been filtered out that are probably meaningful rather than time wasters.
Yeah, and not only that, but there's a lot of rudimentary tasks in IT and in other businesses, finance and accounting, life sciences, that the cloud and artificial intelligence can do on behalf of the user. But secondly as well, you know, building a cloud environment and moving into cloud technology takes a whole different set of skills as well. So we're going to need a new type of graduate. There's lots of job opportunities in cloud and in hyperscalers for graduates and experienced professionals. So while some roles and tasks will get automated on one side, there'll be a brand new family of jobs coming up on the other side as well.
And this is where we're going. I mean, any people now who are considering courses or have an interest in this, I mean, this is the time now to if you can and you are interested, to tailor your education because the opportunities will be there. You know, this is not like Betamax versus VHS. We know where we're going.
We do, and technology as well, you know, sometimes you get these what we call mega trends. And, you know, cloud is definitely one of these. As you say, we know where we're going. It is the technology of now, and it's going to only grow in the future because what companies are saying is that it's more important for me to invest in my people to make sure that they use their time to the best and let the computers do the rest so that, you know, that automation, cloud, cybersecurity, those tools and technologies for the future are a no-regrets investment for people in their careers.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, in certain industries, there's always different ways of working. But is there a sense that we're in a period now where there is a internal combustion engine to electric type of a shift in how work is doing? I'm trying to sort of put it into ways that I can better understand. Yeah, but you know, there's always innovation. But are we seeing a real shift now over the next in the past number of years, but over the next couple of years?
Yeah, because of the way you describe it in terms of, like, people don't worry where their electricity comes from anymore. They switch on the light and the light comes on. IT is sort of going down that road with the large providers providing this always-on access, this ubiquitous or common approach and common tool set to use in IT, so that you'll see that approach in businesses coming where IT before, you know, historically was a large specialism. And, you know, you had to be very invested in how it worked and how it was designed. You know, businesses now don't need to worry about that because it's provided at source by the large providers and then customized by companies like us. But it also allows them to focus on what's important to their business. And the shift we're also seeing now is what we call vertical cloud integration. So this is where you get clouds with the power of everything in the cloud, but also with some features and functions that are applicable to your business, whether that be logistics and supply chain, life sciences, healthcare, finance. So you get the cloud, but you also get some things that you're used to seeing in your business and in your industry. And again, that's a really important component for people that are just new into the cloud or new into that approach.
And just in the last minute, tell us Tata Consultancy Services' role in all of this. Where does your company sit?
Yeah, well, we're really an enabler for those companies who want to go on a journey to the cloud. So, you know, while the large hyperscalers and the large cloud providers will give you the data center and all the technology, we're the glue that puts that together for you in terms of applying consultancy, design, maintenance and support. So we'll help you design it, build it, deploy it and then run it for the long term. And we've lots of experience in doing that a lot across a range of industries over many, many years.
And of course, I mean, often, you know, I'm thinking that you've mentioned big companies there and what have you, but presumably small, medium firms can benefit from this as well. This is not just for the big boys.
And you know, that's the great advantage because, you know, you can start small, you can learn really fast, and then you can grow at your own pace. So, you know, if you're a 1 to 2 user micro business or a small business and you're based in the collab down at the ATU, and you want to get mobilized in the cloud, you can do that with 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 users. But if you're lucky enough to grow and you're lucky enough to accelerate your business and you go to 10, 20, 100 users, the cloud can grow with you and companies like us can help you do that as well. So that's really important.
Yeah. All right. Listen, thanks for your time. It's going to be of interest to those who get it. Thanks so much. That's Gerard Grant, Director of Strategic Initiatives for TCS in Ireland, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts or call 07491 25000. We are going to take a break for the news. Stay right where you are. We'll be back with a ton of stuff over the next 2 hours and a bit. But Michaela's on the way, as I say, with the news and obituary notices.